started thinking about what would happen in a church family if we could break through the barriers of generations and the ages. What would happen if we could get the older mentors in our, older women in our congregation to serve as mentors to the younger generation? What would that look like? And it led me to think about this. Throughout my years, I have been a marriage therapist. I have been a school teacher. I have been a school counselor. I've been a women's ministry leader. I'm the oldest of six children. I have a daughter. I am a daughter. I have a sister. I'm a grandmother. I have hundreds of friends, thousands on Facebook, women friends. And I'm saying that because in all my years of teaching, all my years of counseling, all the years that I have worked in women's ministry, I have learned some things about the way women operate. And without a doubt, I can say one thing that we have in common is we desire authentic connection. We want to have deep friendships that matter to us and that we know we matter to others. And one of the things that I figured out as I was working on all of this material for years is that the only way we can meet women's emotional and spiritual needs is we have to get in small groups. We can't do it in the large collective body of Christ. We have to break it down. So I was doing some research and just reading through some material that had been done on church growth and vitality and what was helping churches to grow. And I found this study that was done several years ago. I believe it was in 2009 that found the healthiest, the most powerful models of growing churches had one thing consistently in common. They had more small groups. So when they broke down the larger sphere of a collection of God's people together into smaller relationships, that church exploded. It started growing. As relationships got deeper, people in the church started feeling more connected to that body of believers. When they started feeling more connected, they felt more like, I matter here and I want to be of service. And then people became more family than just for your friends. You know about the for your friends? You know, you see them on Sunday morning. You see the same people on Sunday morning. And you come in and you say what? Hey, how are you? Great, how are you? Oh, the kids look wonderful. Oh, they're getting so big. How did that happen? Oh, they're so cute. Where's your husband today? Oh, he'll be here. He's parking the car. Great to see you. Go in, you sit down, and you do church together. Sure, that's what we do on Sunday morning. And then you may have the same kind of interchange on your way out the door, but you got to go eat. So, especially if the husband's hungry and the stomach's been growling, we don't stand around real long. And that whole acquaintance relationship may last maybe 5 minutes at the most. And that is the model of church relationships throughout our country, as we meet in the foyer and we have our foyer faces. I don't know about you, but when I leave a church building, the problems that I brought in, the struggles that I have, don't stay in that church building. They go with me. And that foyer meeting I may have had with those friends that were acquaintances are not real fulfilling. So what happens between Sunday and Saturday matters more to me than really what happens on Sunday morning. Because I want to meet with believers. I want to meet with those women in the days between there. Well, I felt like that other women probably had that same kind of hunger. And when I was doing women's ministry in our church back in 2002 and 2003, I was teaching a lot of marriage classes and parenting classes. I was doing small group Bible studies with a lot of the younger women in the church. And I found out that those younger women were hungry for a relationship and a connection with the older women in our churches. And they were gravitating towards me because I was available and I wanted to do it. But we had a church of 800. So if 400 are women, that's a lot of women. And there was just one of me. And I had a couple of other friends who had an interest in that. They were just taking that on as their own personal ministry. But together, we probably weren't ministering to more than about 30 women. So I just knew there had to be an answer to this. So, of course, I do what all women do when they know there's an answer. You go to the Christian bookstore. And I got started reading books on how to set up a women's ministry. And I could find nothing. I found a lot of things, but nothing that I felt served the purposes that I felt like needed to happen. So I had been reading Titus 2:3-5. Titus 2:3-5, and I could do a whole big Bible study on this, but we only have a few more minutes, so I'm not going to do it. But that particular passage is instructing Titus, when he goes to the island of Crete, that he is to teach the churches there. And there were 100 little churches, little pockets of righteousness that had popped up all over this island. But most of the people there were coming out of a pagan, heathen culture. None of them were coming out of a church family environment. That was a brand new thing happening. The church was exploding right then all over Asia. And so these people did not know how to live lives for God. They knew how to become Christians. They heard the gospel message. They joined with Jesus' followers there, but they didn't know how to live holy lives. So Paul tells Titus, you've got to go to that island and teach them how to live for God. We need to make them holy livers. And that's not a body part. But how do you do that? Well, let's get the older men in the church. Let's get the older women in the church to teach them how to do this. And if you study Titus 2:3-5, where it says, teach the older women to train the younger women, there's things like this. Teach them to be kind. Teach them to be pure. Teach them to have self-control. Teach them to love their husbands and love their children. Now, why would you have to teach women those things that you and I probably think that that's just naturally how women are, and especially if they're Christian women, they're going to be pure, they're going to be kind, they're going to have self-control, they're going to love their husbands and children. Well, I'm not a theologian at all. But in my way, my hermeneutics of the way I look at the Bible is that if God said it, it's because there was a problem that needed to be fixed. There's no sense putting something in there that everybody's already doing. So if he says the older women need to train the women to be kind, that means there was probably a lot of women who were not displaying nice behavior. If it says teach the women to love their children, obviously there was problem with parenting going on. If God said, I want you to go and teach them to love their husbands, there was probably a lot of unloving behavior going on in marriages there. Does that sound like anything in America today? We're dealing with a lot of people without a lot of self-control, a lot of meanness, a lot of impurity. There's a lot of messed up parenting going on, and you know the state of marriage right now. It is time for the older people in our churches to help the younger generation become holy livers. Well, when I teach this, and I've done this now for a dozen years, and I've done it here at Pepperdine for 10 years, when I teach this, what I hear in conversations is, I've had this on my heart. I know about Titus 2. I've read that. It's been something I've thought about. I've even done personal mentoring. But I don't have an idea about what that would look like. Well, I didn't either. So I gathered together some of my closest friends, 60 of my closest friends, and we studied Titus 2:3-5. We went through a 6-week study, and I led them in it, and we just kept asking ourselves, what would this look like if we took this, and in the 21st century, we applied it. Back then, it was the 20th. If we applied it to our church family. And we came up with a program which is called Heart to Home. And that ministry program is a small group program. It runs 9 months out of the year. We usually run it on a school schedule, which is August through May. And we meet in people's homes, in an older woman's home, and we have a meal together, and we have Bible study together, and we develop relationships with the younger women. And the younger women we call Heart Sisters, the older women Heart Mom. And in a relationship which takes almost a year, and you're meeting together for almost 30 hours of intense friendship building with everything intentionally and everything that you do to build connection and relationship. And after you've done that for a year, and you've got a small group of 12 women doing that, and if you're in a congregation, let's say you have 10 or 12 groups of that, so you have over 100 women participating in this, all of a sudden this big church family, whether it's 200 or 2,000, becomes a group of friends, almost like family, because we have met together with the purpose of growing our relationship with each other as well as our relationship with God. And that's the plan that I did when I did this program. Well, I'll just tell you a little bit of the history. I have done this now for so long. I've traveled all over the United States teaching this to individual churches. Have any of you ever heard me speak about this before today? Okay. Yeah. I'm actually going to go to the Ziegler's Church in June and teach this at Bentonville Church of Christ, isn't it? I'm going to go there right after I go to Searcy and teach it at College Church there in Searcy. I'm really excited about that. But I have taught this to hundreds of churches all over the United States. But some of you have never heard it before, have you? Until today. That makes me so frustrated. But it makes me very thankful that Pepperdine allows me to come out here and speak here in the lectures and let you know about this. I really believe that that old saying that we have heard for years, that we are one generation from the church dying, is very true. Right now, we have in existence in our population two groups. We have the millennials and the baby boomers. Since the beginning of the recording of the census in the United States of America, the millennials and the baby boomers are the highest population, the most babies born in the history of populations in the United States. So we've got the bookends of this generations. And if your church is anything like most churches in America, we divided by stages and ages. So you've got, you know, your youth group, your college age, you've got your young professionals, you've got your young marrieds, then you've got the young parents, and then you've got the middle agers, then you've got the empty nesters, and then you have the senior saints, or I don't know what you name them in your church. But we have been following this church model for about 50 years in America, and I don't believe it's biblical. And we have done it because we've had people ask for it. We've had people get real used to being with people my own stage and age in life, and it just feels more normal to do that. But the biblical model of discipleship in our churches actually is the generations above always teaching the younger generation. So if you separate all the youth and all the college and all the young professionals, and all they do is feed into each other, I don't know how that really follows the biblical teaching that the older generation is to be training the younger generation. Your church may be different. Y'all may have already adapted some other type of model. But that is predominant, the model of the way that we do small groups as well as life churches, house churches, the way we do our social groups. And so there's very little opportunity for that wonderful, wise widow woman who has been faithful in your church, and she's 80 years old, and you've got this precious 22-year-old young bride who could really benefit from this wonderful wisdom of this 80-year-old woman, and you have no way to get them together. In fact, your church makes ways to separate them by putting them into this biblical, this church model of ages and stages separating. And I really believe we can turn the tide in our churches, in our growth, if we can speak into the lives of these millennials. Because a new church research came out 2 years ago, which showed that the millennials are leaving the church in droves. I wish I could think of a better analogy than that. But they are, it is as if it's a flood of this age group, 20 to 30, that is walking out on churches where they had grown up. And they were there every time the doors were open. They were in youth group. They went to youth camp. They went to church mission trips. Every time there was something that the church was doing, these young people, these children, were showing up for. But by the time they reach 28 or 29, we are retaining only 28 to 29% of them in the church today. But this new study came out 2 years ago that showed those that stayed, the number one reason that they list that they stay is because they had a relationship with an older person in the church. Now, that doesn't mean with an 80-year-old. It could have been. But it could have been with a 40-year-old, someone who had done their premarital, and they stayed connected. It could be that this was just a gregarious Bible teacher who took his young group and bonded with them and made relationships and friendship with them, because the millennials, that 20 to 30-year-old group, which is, again, now the highest population besides the baby boomers, they want authenticity. They want relationships. So the impact that we may make in a Bible class is awesome. We don't want to quit doing Bible classes, but that's not what they're coming to church for. They're coming because church feels like family. It feels like home. And it's like when Miranda, when I was reading her story, when she came into the church, her view of church people is everybody had their act together. I couldn't even relate to these people until she hears this wiser, older woman. I don't know if you know this family, but I'll mention their names. It's the Robertson family of Duck Dynasty. The mentor she's talking about is Kay Robertson. Kay Robertson has, we go to church with them. My husband and Phil are elders together. And Willie and Corey are my niece and nephew. And Kay Robertson has been a heart mom with me since the very beginning. She was one of those close friends in that group of 60s that sat with me to help us build our program. And she is the one that mentored Miranda and brought her from a life that she felt like was no hope. It was doomed because her mom had been married and divorced 4 times, and she was a latchkey kid who grew up with no semblance of family or faith or church, no hope. And when Ben married her, he saw potential in her, but he literally did bring her to me in the counseling center and say, okay, fix her. We laugh about. In fact, we just laughed about it last Sunday at church. She came up and I said, you know, I'm going to talk about you at Pepperdine. She said, I'm so glad. She's just a delight. She and Ben now help run one of our mission programs at one of our church plants. And her husband serves our worship team. She teaches Bible classes. They're a strong family in the Lord. But if she had not been part of this small group where she can connect with someone who authentically could share where Jesus kept their family strong, she would not have seen what hope looks like. We could hear about hope. We could read the scriptures on hope. We could talk about the hope and faith. But until she heard some woman's story that made an impact on her, and that narrative spoke to her heart, I don't think Miranda would have gotten it. Kay ended up having Bible study with Miranda for the next couple of weeks, and Phil baptized her in the river down by their house. There are not many people in America who know the rest of the story, because we don't tell all of the names in that story, but y'all will, and you can go tell anybody. I mean, it's not. I go to church at Whites Ferry Road Church in West Monroe, Louisiana. That's how I know the Robertsons so well, besides we're also family. But we do church authentically there, and real, and we invite people to come in no matter their dress, no matter their economy, no matter where they are in their life, and it looks very real there. And one of the things that we do is we make sure people know that no matter where you are, you have a place in this church family, no matter what your life looks like. And I'm very thankful for Miranda's tender, vulnerable heart that brought her to the Lord back then. But I'm even more grateful for Kay, who loved on her in a way that mattered. And it did not cause her to run away from church, but instead to embrace it. Well, that's what we do in our ministry. We just recently, in February, changed our name from Heart to Home to Heartfelt. And we had a women's conference in West Monroe and invited people from all over the country to come. And we had 2,200 women that came to the Civic Center there, 30 states and Canada. And we simulcast to 40 churches. And we were able to share what we were doing with our Titus II ministry to a lot of women at that time. And so I've been very busy being on the road talking about this. So I'm really happy you're hearing this today, but I'm going to be real unhappy if you go back home and don't do anything with this. You can go on. I'm not closing. I'm just going to tell you this right now. Well, some of you are still awake. You can go on my website, heartfeltministries.org, and if you're taking note, heartfeltministries.org. And I have a lot of different information. I mean, I have a lot of information on there, and then a lot of ways that you can contact me. And please feel free to do that. There's also a bookstore in there where you can order copies of my book. And the reason I'm telling you about my book, believe me, I am not trying to get rich and famous. I could care less. I'm 63 years old with 5 grandkids, and my greatest wealth in life is just to stay home with them all day long. I absolutely love my grandboys. Any of you want to be my Facebook friends and get to know my grandchildren? That's what I do on Facebook. I tell you about my book because everything you need to know to start your own mentoring program is in this book. Okay? So if you read this, you won't feel frustrated anymore. You'll say, oh, we have a plan. Because I write in the first chapter of the book, I tell you why I started this program, why I think it's important for churches, all churches in America, to have it. And then I give you 10 chapters of wonderful stories, of life-changing stories of women, much like Miranda's. And then I give you a couple of chapters with how-tos, how you can build your own program. If you'd like to learn how to do our specific program, Heartfelt, and not have to reinvent the wheel, then I can come and teach your church to do it, and I'd be glad to come. Or you can purchase our training program. And again, I'm not doing this to try to sell it. I just want every church to do mentoring. And if you want to build your own and call it after your name, that's fine with me. I don't care. I'm not trying to get famous off of this. And in fact, when the number of people who called me and interviewed me about this, I'm very excited about this. I'm going to be on Focus on the Family in June talking about it, so I'm pumped. But every time I talk about it, I'm extremely passionate about making sure this happens throughout our churches. If I could disappear off the face of the earth and this would keep going, I would be super happy. But for some reason, God has chosen my motor mouth to be the vehicle to get the word out there. So I'm kind of like Moses. I'm reluctant. But when you put your hand in God's, you better be ready to go where he goes. And so what I've told God over the years in doing this, and I've told him I've got 30 more years, I think I'll be healthy. Who knows? I may make it to 100. But 30 years more ministry. And I've told him, if you open a door, I will go through it. And I won't kick any doors down, but I sure will go through anything you're opening. God just keeps opening a door constantly for me to come into to talk to women about the importance of this. Now, let me talk to you a little bit about my title, and then God said to the woman. To go back to what I said when I started. Older women, if you are not mentoring, training, guiding, nurturing, teaching in relationship with younger women, I believe you've got a problem with Scripture. Okay? Now, we can talk about that privately, and I can pray over you and get forgiveness and all that. But I really do believe we are missing this link in the church in America right now, in 2015. I don't believe we have enough women helping the younger women live this Christian life. And I see it happening even in my own church, even though our church is kind of the cornerstone of Titus II mentoring. I even see it among some of our women who I'm still having to encourage to get involved. And one of the reasons I think women are so reluctant is they believe I haven't done it right. If people really wanted to hear my story, it's pretty rocky, or it's pretty bad. I was doing a training at a large church in middle America, And there were about 60 women in the room, and I was teaching them how to do it. And at one of the breaks that I gave, I'd seen a woman sitting in the back of the room. Well, she stands up as soon as we announce the break and comes charging up the aisle like this.
She's white-haired. She's as tall as I am, so we're pretty intimidating at almost 6 foot tall. And she looks at me with this kind of this gleaming eye, and she says, "I've been married and divorced 4 times. I've left the Lord twice. I'm back now, and this church doesn't know what to do with me." "Do you think I need to be in this program?" I said, "We need you so badly." She teared up, and she told me her story.
She'd had a rocky life, 4 marriages, 3 of them were abusive marriages. Her last marriage, I don't remember the reasons of it, but she was very embarrassed and ashamed because of that life. So she had been in and out of her faithfulness with the Lord, but she said, "God's never left me one time." And she said, "I went through some really rocky times raising my children, and they left the Lord, but they're all back now." And she said, "A few years ago I retired." She said, "I've retired. I'm a nurse. I've retired 3 times. The last time I came back, at 70 years old, she was 74, she said, "I told God, I want to be a hospice nurse because I want to tell all my patients about Jesus before they die." She shared the gospel now with every one of her patients, and she said, "I don't care if they don't like it, they can fire me, but I'm going to do it." She said, "How could it hurt? I've already been retired twice." So she spent her days ministering to people in their final days of life, teaching about the Word of God. And she said, "My life has been a mess, but," she said, "what stories I can tell about God's faithfulness to me in my life." I said, "Boy, do we need you." The next year, my daughter-in-law was in her group. And she ministered to my daughter-in-law in a way that I don't think anyone else could have done it like Ruby could. Because as Jamie's parents went through their divorce after a 44-year marriage, devastating their grown children, this older woman who had watched her own children struggle had such comforting, encouraging things to speak over her. I know God did not do that just accidentally. That was a plan for those two women, that older woman and that younger woman, to meet and match up and to have those needs met. Older women, and I don't know if you're 50 as an older woman or you may be 85 as an older woman sitting here today. Our story that we tell the younger women has nothing to do with us and our faithfulness. It's everything to do with God and how He carried us. And the faithfulness that He played out in our lives over and over through the hard times. That's what we need to teach in the church to the younger generation. That God's faithfulness is there. We can walk around with that "been there, done that" t-shirt in a lot of situations. And we need to be sharing that story. Second reason a lot of women don't do it is they're intimidated by doing something one-on-one. They may just not be comfortable initiating a relationship and going in and building that close relationship just all by themselves. Well, you know how women are. We like to do things in groups. We go to the bathroom in a group. I mean, I go to the bathroom with a girlfriend and she'll say, "Hey, I'm going to go to the bathroom. You want to go?" Can you imagine if your husbands did that? Ooh, gross. Yeah. But we do everything in groups. So we set up our Titus 2 ministry so we work with our friends in a group. So we have 3 or 4 of our good friends mentoring a small group of 6 to 8 girls. And we do this over and over on a routine, consistent basis. So we take away that factor of it feeling not really comfortable for me to do this because I'm doing it with my friends. So you'll get together 2 or 3, 4 of your good friends together and you will mentor with a younger group. And when we say younger women, we're talking about the younger women that are that age 18, they're out of high school, but they're still at that time, that stage of life where they could be raising their own kids. They may be single, not have children, or they may be married with no children, they may be divorced, but they're still at that stage of life. And the older women are women who are through with that stage. And that's how we divide it up. It's more stage than it is by age. So what I encourage you to do when you walk away from here today, I'd like for you to do something for me. I want you to really pray and seek God on this and say, if this is not happening in my church, what do we need to do so that we do not lose any more young people in our church? Because you are going to be carrying your younger people into their adult faith life with this. When I was 23, graduated from Harding, married my husband, moved into this wonderful church family with about 350 people, I thought I had my act together. I mean, I had a college degree, you know, I was smart, I could talk my way through anything. And I find out after I get married, I really don't know anything about how to do this life. I happened to be part of a church family that believed in church really being family. And I had about a dozen women who took me under their wings. And for about 12 years, they taught me how to do life. They were the first group of women that encouraged me to teach my first Bible study. We had a women's retreat. It was the first time I was ever asked to speak in public with a group of women. And they encouraged me and they empowered me to do that. And they taught me how to do it. And they laughed with me. They helped me through infertility issues. They saw my children being born. They were there for me when I brought my kids home from the hospital, including my firstborn son that's sitting here on the floor. He's carrying my bags here at Pepperdine for me. Those women spoke into my life on a regular routine basis. And do you know that when I moved to my next congregation where we were at White Street Road, I just assumed that every church operated that way. But I found out they don't. And I saw that gap and I knew that needed to be fixed. And as I've spoken, like I said, to hundreds of women, thousands of women, hundreds of churches throughout the United States, I find this is not something we have in common, is doing Titus 2. So I want to encourage you, when you leave here today, leave a little frustrated, a little unsatisfied that this particular aspect of our church is not happening. Men that are in here, if you're an elder, a leader, a ministry leader, one of the pulpit ministers in your church, just a great husband, wonderful grandpa, half of your congregation, and perhaps, as in a lot of congregations today, more than half, are females. And females have different needs than men. Yes? If you've ever been married for one day, you know. We have different needs. Our emotional and our spiritual needs are different. And women need each other. And we need that partnership and that bonding. And in America, in this country, look, I've lived a long time, it used to be a more natural thing for women to have these kind of friendships and relationships. We are relational people, but our culture started changing, and we moved away from doing these relationships naturally. We used to live close to family. We used to live in the same towns with our mothers and our grandmothers and our sisters. And no wonder we have lost that, because our biological family separated and we didn't know how to make our faith family like biological families. Or, as is happening in America today, a lot of us have very misfunctioning biological families. So our faith family sometimes is the only family we really have. But we don't know how to do that. And we need church leaders. We need the men in our congregations. We need those people who decide, helping us build programs that we can minister to one another as women, and especially ones where we can pass our faith on generationally, one to the other. Psalm 78 says, we are to tell of the wonders and deeds to our children and to their children, and we will not hide that from them. Tell is the operational verb there. We need to be talking about our faith. And one of the ways that we can do it is to get into a small, comfortable group where we can sit and share who we are in the Lord and how we got there. Thank y'all for coming today. God bless you. If you, oh, I wanted to give a couple books away.